This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
To sum up, Donald Trump's water policy is very simple. Give the farmers all the water they want, even if it dries up all the rivers in the state. When he says there is no drought, he means that you take all the water that's available and give it to the agricultural interests in the San Joaquin Valley.
An issue that didn't come up in Monday's presidential debate, and unfortunately may not show up in subsequent debates either, is what are the candidates' water policies? It's one of the most vital issues for all Americans and for the globe. And yet it's almost never mentioned on the national political debate stage. But if you look for them, you'll find that each of the two major party candidates for president do have positions on water. Well, one has actual proposals and the other one has a set of ill-conceived opinions that could theoretically inform policy. This week on Sea Change Radio, we hear from the Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle, Carolyn Lockhead, to compare Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton on water. We'll discuss the preposterous supposition advanced by one candidate that the California drought is just a figment of our collective imaginations ginned up by liberals, the idea that it's wasteful to allow rivers to flow to the sea, and Clinton's vision for common stewardship. Stay tuned as we dive deep into the politics of water. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Carolyn Lockhead. She is the Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle. Carolyn, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be here.
So you recently wrote something for the Chronicle entitled Clinton Plans While Trump Scoffs on Water Environment. We haven't discussed much about the differences between the two candidates when it comes to their environmental issues. But why don't we just focus for a second on water issues alone? Why don't you first lay out Donald Trump's approach to the drought in California or in the Colorado River Basin?
Sure. I think, you know, even though drought tends to be viewed as a regional issue, in this case, it's emblematic of how Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump approach environmental issues generally. All we know about Trump's position, such as it is that he went to a big rally in Fresno in May, you know, during the California primary. And he met with sort of loosely, not officially, with officials of the Westlands Water District, which is the most powerful, largest and most powerful, politically powerful irrigator in the country. They farm the dry west side of the San Joaquin Valley. They're heavily dependent on irrigation water, and their claim is that they're not getting enough during the drought because fish are getting too much. So he met privately with this group before the rally, and then he got to the rally and he said, just said there is no drought. That the problem is that all the water is going out to sea. So he was essentially repeating the talking points of one water interest group in California, and that's the San Joaquin Valley farmers who depend on irrigation.
How do they explain this theory that the water is just going out to sea, that we have plenty of water, but it's somehow, as Trump said, quote, they're shoving it out to sea? What do they mean by that?
Well, that's a really interesting question. So if you think about it, what does it mean shoving the water out to sea? Well, that's what rivers do. Rivers naturally, you know, flow from their headwaters, often in the Sierra Nevada, in California's case, and flow to the sea. That's the natural system of nature. And that's how all these ecosystem services, like such as fish and water quality and all these things that nature delivers to human beings and to the rest of the environment get done. So what the farmers are saying is that essentially, no, the river shouldn't flow to the sea. And in fact, we have dried up the second largest river in the state of California. That's the San Joaquin River. It's dry through much of the course of it. And so when farmers say we're wasting water to the sea or we're shoving it out to sea, they're saying we should use all of it for human consumption. That means no fish. Also, not just the fish, but also the birds and other wildlife that depend on rivers, all of nature, essentially, shouldn't have any water either. That's the when they say that, if you think about what putting water out to sea means, that's what rivers do. And so that's the consequence of that line of argument.
So it's a no river policy, essentially.
Right. Because rivers shove water out to sea. That's what they do. And so when you say you're shoving it all out to sea, it means you're not using every last drop of it. And using every last drop of it means the rivers go dry. And in California's case, they have gone dry. And in fact, many of the rivers are flowing anywhere from just 10% of their natural flows to maybe at most, you know, the state is trying to get it up to 40% of the flow of the San Joaquin River, and that's considered unbelievably radical. Not even close to 100%. That's how much water we're using.
Now, you note in the piece that the Trump campaign has issued no policy positions on water or on the environment in general, and that there's no environmental plan on its website. But getting back to this May rally where he spoke to the crowd at Celand Arena in Fresno, what about the fact that it hasn't rained in years? This does not seem to affect policy when it comes to these farmers.
Right. So when they say Trump was sort of doing, when he said there is no drought, I suspect he didn't mean that it actually hasn't rained, although that's what he said. What he was doing a shorthand for the farmers' argument that we wouldn't have a water shortage if we used every last drop of water that flows in rivers. That's what he meant by that. But the fact of the matter is, when he says there's no drought, it shows sort of a stunning disregard for the fact that California is in the worst drought in its recorded history. That's a very, very serious problem. And at the federal level, unfortunately, the administration is just beginning to get a grip on what the drought in the West under climate change is going to, what the problems that's going to cause. There are enormous problems. Many cities in the West are completely reliant on river flows that are getting weaker and weaker and weaker, as in the Colorado River, which is another river, by the way, that doesn't flow to the sea because it's all being used. So this is a sort of a very, very big social and economic problem that has been sort of sliding under the radar because Washington policymakers haven't given it its due yet. And it's come to prominence now because the California drought has been so severe. It's a hot drought. It's related to climate change, scientists believe. And it's could go on, you know, we don't know how long. But it's a very severe drought. And policymakers are going to have to start to address it. So when Trump says there is no drought, that's just blithely ignoring a really big, big impending social and economic problem in the West.
And what are the problems that these disgruntled farmers are ignoring? What conspiracy theory is at the root of them blaming Nancy Pelosi, liberals, Democrats, Hillary Clinton, fill in the blank, on the drought and their difficulties farming during a drought? You see these signs all up and down I-5.
It's the classic conservative response to any sort of environmental regulation that restricts any kind of business activity. So, you know, if you want to restrict coal pollution and the environmental destruction caused by coal mining, then, you know, you have a war on coal and you're hurting people and putting them out of work. Same thing with water. So if you don't give farmers every bit of water that they can possibly use to grow whatever they want to grow in unlimited quantities at the expense of people who don't farm, other businesses, and of course the wildlife and plant life and ecosystems that depend on flowing rivers, then that's the basis of their argument. So, you know, you're causing the drought by paying attention to any interest except for farmers, besides farmers. They want all, that the argument at its basis is we want all the water and we don't care what happens to the environment as a consequence. We don't care if the birds along the Pacific Flyway, a major migration route, can't find any water to use to land in. We don't care if storied salmon runs that are native fish go extinct. We don't care about riverine habitat. We don't care about watersheds. I mean, you have to care about none of those things in order for that argument to make any sense.
Now, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too far, but maybe you can summarize what the Delta Tunnels project is, and I'm curious if these farmers are for or against it in general.
Well, I think there's a lot of skepticism about the tunnels because they're concerned about paying for them. They're going to be enormously expensive. And they, in order to pay for them, they have to have water guarantees.
Why don't you first take a step back and explain what it is for what they are for our listeners, what this project is?
Basically, two very, very giant pipelines that would run under the Delta and take water directly out of the Sacramento River and deliver it south to big cities in Southern California and to farms in the San Joaquin Valley. And it's a massive, massive river diversion. And instead of pushing the water through the Delta and sucking it out from the Delta, the natural estuary, they would tap directly into the Sacramento River and tap the water there. The idea being that it would cause less of the environmental harm that's going on to the Delta, but that assumes that you don't take any more water out of the river or you take even less out of the river. It's a, you know, it's a open to argument whether or not that's true, because to pay for these, this is, would be an enormous infrastructure project and billions of dollars. To pay for it, farmers would have to have a guaranteed water supply in order to pay off these bonds. So
that kind of, it kind of underscores the conundrum that some of these conservative farmers face is, A, they want small government, but B, they want the government to somehow divert all the rivers so that man can use it. It seems like these are at loggerheads in some ways, right?
Yeah, farming in the West has never been about small government. Farming in arid lands, which much of California is all about massive federal infrastructure projects and state infrastructure projects. Billions and billions of taxpayer dollars that have built the system of dams and canals, the Central Valley Project at the federal level, the State Water Project that Jerry Brown's father, Governor Pat Brown, built in the 60s. This is all about massive federal subsidies to develop the infrastructure to get the water to these farms. They're utterly dependent upon it.
So this is just another version of Obamacare is slavery and don't touch my Medicare.
Well, this is big. I mean, water and farming in the West is big government. There's no question about that. I mean, it wouldn't exist without massive, massive infrastructure projects that private entities could never afford on their own.
Ever since the world ended, there's no more black or white. Ever since we all got blended, there's no more reason to fuss and fight. Dogmas that we once defended no longer seem worthwhile. Ever since the world ended, I faced the future. future. With a smile.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Carolyn Lockhead. She's a Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle. And if you could just sum up what we know of Donald Trump's environmental and water policies, that would be great.
To sum up, Donald Trump's water policy is very simple. Give the farmers all the water they want, even if it dries up all the rivers in the state. When he says there is no drought, he means that you take all the water that's available and give it to the agricultural interests in the San Joaquin Valley. So also sort of broadly applies to his environmental policy. He says, let's leave a little bit for the environment, but, you know, not at the expense of business. That's pretty much his environmental approach.
And now let's turn to his opponent, Hillary Clinton. She has pages and pages of environmental policy written out on her website and some specifics on water as well. Maybe you can elaborate.
Yeah, it was interesting because back during the California primary in June, she was asked about water. She tread very carefully around the subject. She said, I haven't really looked into it that much, but she clearly knew a little bit about the contours of it, but knew enough not to get involved in the thicket of it, which can be very complicated and very controversial, as we all know. But interestingly enough, since then, her campaign obviously has been delving into this issue at great, great depths and has issued what water policy analysts say is a very well thought out plan that looks not just at California, but at the broader west-wide problem, which we know scientists tell us is going to intensify with climate change. It's a really big looming social and economic problem for the United States because so many people now live in the West. You've got Phoenix, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, all these giant cities dependent upon the Colorado River, which is drying up, basically. The big reservoirs that we thought we would never empty are being emptied, and they may never fill again. So this is a very, very big problem that has gone under the radar and hasn't gotten a lot of attention. Well, Hillary Clinton, and she doesn't specifically look at the California drought. She takes this broader west-wide picture of the Colorado River Basin and then lays out a pretty extensive and pretty detailed and pretty well-nuanced water policy. And it's the other surprising or maybe not surprising thing is that it's gotten almost no media attention.
It's pretty ambitious in a lot of ways, isn't it? Maybe you can explain what collaborative stewardship is, for example.
Well, that means that you just don't impose it from Washington. You work with the stakeholders involved. You work with the farmers, you work with the cities, you work with the environmental advocates, and you try to come up with a policy that doesn't spark, you know, World War III of water. So it's a collaborative approach. It works. It has worked in other areas. It's worked up in Oregon, and there are many examples that this is more productive than endless lawsuits and endless fighting in the legislature, trying for one side to get all that it wants. So that's her collaborative stewardship model. The other interesting thing is she's got this water innovation lab thing that would model the approach, the federal approach to water, on the federal approach to energy, like the Lawrence Livermore Labs. They come up with this really cutting-edge stuff, technology, that can help solve shortage issues. So it's a very very nuanced plan, and it also carefully avoids sort of getting in bed with one side or the other in this water issue. It's trying to come up with a new approach.
It would seem that these are federal issues. We often
just look at California's water issues as California's water problem. But A, California is the nation's breadbasket. B, it's the sixth largest economy in the world. And C, when we're talking about the Colorado River Basin, because that's where Los Angeles is getting a lot of its water, that's a nine-state area under some metrics.
Right. No, it's definitely a federal issue. And part of the reason it's gone without a lot of attention, the attention it certainly deserves at the federal level, is because we treat water as a regional issue. And there are good reasons for doing that.
Yeah, explain why. That has historical roots, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, river basins are regional often. Irrigation districts are local. Water systems sometimes can be very local. So we've always sort of viewed it as a local or a regional problem. But because of this west-wide drought issue, it needs a bigger federal overview and a bigger look at the overall implications for the nation and all the states involved. It's not something that you can just deal with on a regional basis.
And the Tennessee Valley Authority, that was one of the signature projects of the New Deal. It sounds like the Clinton campaign is trying to dig deep into a multi-state project on water, similar to the way the TVA dealt with water, flooding, power. Is that fair to say?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, what they're doing is they're taking, because there's big federal money involved, because all of these dams and all this infrastructure is run through the federal government, through the Bureau of Reclamation. There's a very large federal interest in the West's plumbing system. So, you know, that's the federal nexus. It's a very obvious one. And, you know, all these dams are damming rivers that flow through several states. So, you know, you have the Colorado River, as you said, with the nine or so states and its watershed. So, yeah, there's definitely a federal role.
And what kind of autonomy can the White House exhibit if Hillary Clinton were to be elected, but Republicans held on to at least one house of Congress?
What kind of autonomy?
How much power could a Clinton administration wield in terms of implementing this plan?
Yeah, well, I think the Obama administration sort of laid out a template earlier this year. They had a water summit at the White House. And Congress, unfortunately, has been gridlocked over this issue since the drought began 5 years ago. Between House Republicans who take the farmers' approach and the two senators, Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer, also taking different approaches. Feinstein often more willing to compromise with the agricultural interests, but Boxer definitely holding out on the environmental side. So they've been able to get virtually nothing done on this issue. So the legislature under a Clinton administration presumably would be also gridlocked. So that would leave administrative control over really her only tools, levers would be administrative actions. And they laid out sort of that approach at the template set at this water summit where you make a push as you did on green energy, and you use whatever levers you have within the federal government to, you know, boost attention to the issue, direct money to areas that you think could bear fruit, increase the research spending, and so forth.
When I come home, baby, and I've been working all night long, I put my daughter on my knee, and she said, "Daddy, what's wrong?" She whispered. baby, and my air so sweet. You know what she said? She said, ooh, daddy, you're a fool to cry. You're a fool to cry. And it makes me wonder why.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Carolyn Lockhead. She is the Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle. So, Carolyn, you're fact-checking a lot of the debate issues as they come online. If you were able to ask questions of the candidates, instead of what we might hear, what are your environmental policies or what do you plan to do about the water crisis? What do you think would be a better way to approach this? So you have the floor as the moderator for a moment in a hypothetical.
Well, I mean, the key is to, take the broader view. What are you going to do about the water crisis? But when they come up with platitudes or they come up with outright fantasies, or they make outrageous statements such as there is no drought, or follow what the implications of those things so that you have to have follow-up questions, you have to press them on the point and not let them skate away with generalities. I think that would be the key.
She's the Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle, Carolyn Lockhead. Carolyn, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Great, thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Fela Kuti, Mose Allison, and the Rolling Stones. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.